You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, February 5th, 2025, or 2525 in your checkbook. For the three of you left who write checks, it's another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota. From wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the app or by podcast or watching us on Facebook or YouTube, we are glad you're starting your day right here. I got a question for you. Should the NFL have kind of prematurely caved in to Donald Trump and announcing yesterday they are removing the phrase end racism from the end zones? There will not be, you know, there's ones that says end racism. There's one that says it takes all of us. There's some other slogans as well. But they know that Donald Trump's attending the Super Bowl this weekend. So they announced ahead of time that end racism will not be in the end zone for the first time in a few years here. What do you think about that? You can put a comment on social media, or you can send us a text or give us a call along the way about that and so many other things. That's just one of the shiny objects we could talk about today. Things designed to get you talking, but they don't necessarily have a substantive impact on your day-to-day life, like the other one we're going to talk about as well. President Trump saying yesterday, the U.S. should take over Gaza. The U.S. should take over part of the Mideast. That should go over really well. So we'll talk a little bit about those things. We will also get into Governor Tony Evers making an announcement on PFAS water contamination and a new process for writing rules on it. Even though Republicans are still blocking the rules and they're still blocking the money, they've been blocking money for cleanup for nearly 600 days. And we will explain what Governor Evers had to say about it yesterday, coming up in just a bit. This week's Climate Check with Melissa Baldoff includes a guest from Evergreen Action, a group with new polling that indicates the vast majority of Americans, whatever your party affiliation, still want to see action on reducing air pollution and growing the availability of cleaner energy sources, that despite Republican politician obstruction. Then we've got a busy second hour ahead. We will be talking just after 7 o'clock with Jeff Wright, the superintendent in Sauk Prairie, about his candidacy for state superintendent of public instruction. He will be in a primary election along with incumbent Jill Underley, who we talked to yesterday, and Brittany Kinzer, the three of them, and then the top two advance to the April 1st general election. And at 7:30, we will check in with Congressman Mark Pocan about the latest action in the never dull, never quite legal Trump show going on in Washington, D.C. So again, along the way, you can call us or text us at 855-5CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can also put, you can use the app to call us or text us as well. And Tony notes that he just wrote a check for the first time this year yesterday. I will probably write my first check of the year sometime in April or May. It doesn't happen very often. Tony also noting it's all ridiculous about the end racism removal, but I couldn't count on billionaire NFL owners to be moral authorities. True. Truer words never spoken. Brittany Merlot will be here in an hour, but here's her state forecast after a brief cool down yesterday. We get a little warmer today, but that's ahead of some light snow pushing in later tonight. Then things turn windy tomorrow with a bigger snowstorm on the way for the weekend. So here's the state forecast for this morning. Mostly cloudy, turning warmer, light afternoon snow in the western part of the state. a light wintry mix moving into southern parts of Wisconsin. Highs in the mid-20s north to low 30s in the south with a southeast wind 10 to 15 miles an hour. Tonight, snow in the north and central parts of the state as well. Southern Wisconsin may see some light freezing rain, sleet, and snow. A dusting in the south, 2 to 4 inches up north. Lows tonight, mid-teens in the north, upper 20s in the south. And again, more from Brittany Merlot coming up in just a bit. Temperatures at the bus stop at this hour look like this. It's 3 degrees above zero right now here in Chippewa Falls. It's 4 below in Hayward. Amory is 2 above. Wausau, 2 above. Wisconsin Rapids at 5 degrees right now. La Crosse, 7. Green Bay, 4. And then Madison's at 13 degrees, Waukesha 14, at its 26 degrees in Radio Park in Racine, where we find the one and the only Greg Bach, still recuperating from vacation, because vacation hangover is a real thing.
Yeah.
And it's not just the beverages you might have consumed, but the whole getting used to that whole alarm clock, working, peopling. I'm never great on peopling after a vacation.
I'm not so bad with peopling. I just don't want people to expect too much from me, my peopling. You know, just to, just, you know,
temper
hello,
your expectations.
You? And I have those, like, how was your vacation? It was very fun. And if they delve deeper, I'm like, I have some key phrases I can access in my memory here. And I just be like, yes, it was great. Warm. Fun. Very nice. Barbecue. There it is.
There you go. Then don't ask for more. If you didn't get a postcard. And by the way, does anybody send a postcard from their vacations anymore?
No.
I don't think that they do. But it's funny the things that we so take for granted. And then you go, wait a minute. That thing doesn't happen anymore. You know? Let's see. Tony asks on YouTube, is that the Greg? I saw he was a millionaire on Instagram.
Jeez.
At least he reached a million views. What is that about?
A video that was posted by a very handsome and capable, well, he is handsome and capable, but I feel like it's a trademark for Luke Mathers, but a very wonderful person here at Civic Media posted a video for Matt and Aaron Air, and it has reached over a million views. So
a million views?
Yep. Yep, and let me tell you, all the comments are so supportive and nice. They tell me what I can do with my body. They say really suggestive things about my family.
Well, the peace and the harmony that one finds in the comment section.
Oh yes, absolutely, especially in this new landscape called Meta.
Yes. Oh, I know. Everything there is an affirmation.
Yes.
Of something. Let's do a little sports at 6:14. The Badger men's basketball team plays, the women's basketball team plays tonight versus USC. Coverage on some Civic Media stations in Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Richland Center, and the Civic Media app, all starting at 6:10 this evening. In men's basketball, the 21st-ranked Badger men's basketball team continued its home domination of Indiana, beating the Hoosiers 76-64 on Tuesday night. The Badgers have now won their last 21 home games against Indiana. That's the Hoosiers' longest road losing streak against any opponent. The Hoosiers haven't beat the Badgers in Madison since January of 1998, the first year of the Kohl Center. The Badgers will next play at Iowa Saturday at noon, and you can hear that game. Coverage starts at 11 on several Civic Media stations, as well as the Civic Media app. And the Badger men's hockey team will be playing Friday and Saturday against Penn State. You can hear that on WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. Coverage begins at 6:30 Friday, 5:30 on Saturday. And speaking of WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, Melissa Kay will be along for today's history lesson in a little while as well. Back to last night's action, the 11th-ranked Marquette men's basketball team lost to 12th-ranked St. John's 70-64 in their Big East showdown at Madison Square Garden. So Marquette has now dropped two in a row and fell to 3-3 in the Big East They fell to 3-3 in the conference. That was after they'd had a six-game winning streak, including conference and non-conference action. The Marquette men are next playing Saturday afternoon in Omaha up against Creighton. And the Badger women's hockey team next plays Saturday and Sunday at the University of Minnesota. So there's a little look at sports at just about 6:16 here. I will not spend a lot of time on the idea that I woke up to this morning that President Donald Trump, meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, said out loud, the U.S. should take over Gaza and permanently remove, displace the 2 million Palestinians who call the Gaza Strip home. 2 million minus the 47,000 who have been killed so far in a couple of years of fighting here. But all Trump could talk about was the real estate end of it. It was going to be the new Riviera, et cetera, et cetera. I know that he's older than me. So I know he remembers how well it works when the U.S. tries to hold on to a piece of land in the Middle East, because we're both old enough to remember the bombing of the Marine barracks in Lebanon in 1986. That would be only the beginning of what the U.S. would face. And so in dismissing this cockamamie idea, let me put it directly. Which one of you is going to volunteer first to have your grandson or your granddaughter be the first to be killed by an IED or something else in Gaza? I know that sounds harsh because it's a stupid idea. And I don't normally like to use that word on the radio, but it is. It's stupid to even talk about. And here's why Donald Trump is talking about it. Because it takes the conversation away from the things that are truly impacting us, like the world's richest man having access to all of our personal information in computer databases. Whatever happened to the Hillary Clinton butter emails people? I guess they're really quiet about this. And then there's the shutting down of USAID and the announcement expected today of shutting down the U.S. Department of Education. These are real things. USAID is our best face to the world, the humanitarian, life-saving care that we give. If we stop doing that around the world, that creates a vacuum that China will be happy to fill, or Russia, or other nations. That is soft power that costs us a fraction of our total federal budget. So there are real problems. There are real unqualified cabinet nominees getting appointed who are not going to do great jobs in office. So when you hear Trump talking about Gaza, quickly dismiss it and keep your eye on the ball on the things that still need to be listed. Otherwise, they go through at our own peril. We'll have more after this on Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
One of the members of Three Dog Night is part of today's history lesson. That's coming up in a half hour here on Up North News Radio. You can get our daily newsletter. Sign up over at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the banner on top of the homepage. There is an article there about how one Western Wisconsin hospital is able to expand while others are not only not expanding, some of them are shutting down their OBGYN services. Something different is happening in Baldwin, and we'll tell you more about what's going on at the hospital there. Christina Laurie also has an article in there about which former Wisconsin Badger has the most Super Bowl rings. And it's also the anniversary of the birth of Laura Ingalls Wilder, born on February. She's got it in today's newsletter, but it's this Friday that she was born 158 years ago, February 7th. Of 1867. So all of that in a newsletter that maybe I should pre-read better, but you can find it over at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Governor Tony Evers made an announcement yesterday about fighting PFAS in our groundwater. Those are the industrial chemical pollutants that can be harmful to humans. And as a result, any normal person would do whatever was necessary to get these chemicals out of our water. And if possible, fine the companies that failed to dispose of these chemicals properly. But the Republicans running the Wisconsin legislature, and thankfully there are fewer of them for the first time in many years, but they're still in charge, and they are still choosing to represent big business rather than their constituents. They won't represent the families in their district, the kids, the future health of the natural resources in their own backyard. For more than 600 days now, for just a little under 600 days now, Republicans in the legislature have been sitting on the $125 million that they themselves approved to clean up PFAS. But they included language in the cleanup that was essentially a giveaway to big business. It was a pro-polluter set of strings attached. And Governor Evers vetoed the strings. And Republicans have chosen to let Wisconsin groundwater stay contaminated so that they can protect corporate polluters from having to pay the cost. And that's not all. Republicans have repeatedly blocked Evers from putting new PFAS rules in place. Republicans in the legislature and Republicans serving on the State Natural Resources Board, the governing body for the Department of Natural Resources, are behind that. And it's not like they're blocking one rule and if they would just change their minds, everything would be fine. No, the process of passing pollution rules has its own set of rules for how you pass the rules, and that includes deadlines. If you miss a deadline, the whole rulemaking process has to start over, and that can take a couple of years. And that's where we are now. What Governor Evers announced yesterday is restarting something Republicans rejected earlier so that they could choose polluted water and protect corporate polluters. Now, Republicans have claimed that they are just trying to protect innocent landowners who had nothing to do with the PFAS being discovered on their land. No, there was already language to that effect, but the Evers announcement includes even more protections. So that should now get Republican support and release that funding and put new funding in this next state budget, right? Well, based on the tone of the state senator leading the charge for big business, one Eric Wimberger of Oconto, he was the author of the original strings attached bill, the bill that the executive director of Midwest Environmental Advocates called a pro-polluter bill. Well, he indicated yesterday, Senator Wimberger did, that he's still not ready for the rest of us to have fewer worries about toxic groundwater. Wimberger claims that Republicans want, quote, a strong legal framework to protect innocent landowners. In corporate Republican speak, that means he wants a bill that's chock full of loopholes for corporations to avoid having to pay for their mess. The taxpayers should have to pay for it instead through the DNR. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, as I've said for many years, basically the state's shadow Republican Party, contends that the DNR cannot force companies to clean up their messes unless they write a rule outlining the process. And guess who's blocking the DNR from issuing new rules? You see how this is working now? So as noted in the Wisconsin Examiner, an article by the great Henry Redman, state law defines hazardous materials already and gives the DNR authority to figure out which materials meet that definition of hazardous and act accordingly. But WMC and Wimberger and other Republicans are contending the DNR should actually have to go through the rulemaking process for each and every PFAS chemical or categories of PFAS, of which there are an estimated 12,000 different types of chemical compounds, and more are created almost every day. as industry tries to invent things that are stronger, more waterproof, more heat resistant, nonstick, foam for putting out fires, and on and on. So do you go with, this is what hazardous is, and we trust the experts at the DNR, and we want the polluters to be held accountable, or do you hold up the money, do you hold up the enforcement, and do you show no signs of wanting to get PFAS out of the water with any serious intent? Well, as of today, for the Republicans, it's 581 days since that money was first available, but has not yet been released. So Governor Evers has new recommendations out, new funding in his upcoming state budget bill that he'll reveal week after next. And then we see, once again, whether Republicans in the legislature will continue to side with big business, or if they will finally choose their constituents, their children, their health, and the natural resources in their own backyards. Before we get to climate check, I want to recommend to you Dan Schaefer at the Recombobulation Area and political editor of Civic Media has a new article on the website and in his newsletter, Donald Trump and the Rise of the Pro Wrestling Republicans, talking about the showbiz aspect of the 2024 election campaign. Melissa Baldoff is coming up next. You're up north. Back now with this week's Climate Check with Melissa Baldoff on Up North News Radio on this Wednesday morning. Melissa, hello, how are you?
I'm doing well, how are you?
I'm doing good, thanks, because in what has been, just a fire hose of, not so great news the past couple of weeks, you're bringing us a little ray of sunshine, a little reminder that no matter what's happening in Washington, D.C., or even Madison for that matter, when you look all around the country, things actually look pretty good for people recognizing climate issues and where we need to go from here.
That is so true. I feel like the last few weeks there's been a lot of bad news. Yeah. So it is really good to be here to have a guest that is going to talk a little bit about some of the kind of hopeful things that we can take with us. There are so many organizations, partners who are taking action. Today, I'm really excited that we have Courtney Brady joining us from Evergreen Action. They are an organization that is leading an all-out national mobilization to defeat the climate crisis. They've been doing this work for a while, and they are going to just, ramp up even more given the change that we have at the federal level and knowing we don't have partners in federal government anymore. And we're really excited to welcome Courtney to join us today.
Courtney, hello. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Tell us about your role with Evergreen Action, and then we'll get into the group itself.
Yeah. So at Evergreen Action, we, as Melissa stated, do a lot of policy and advocacy work. A lot of our work is focused on federal action. So we were really a part of the advocacy to pass Act, which folks probably know is the largest clean energy and climate investment in history globally. And a lot of the work that I do on our state's team is focused on helping states really understand what's available and what will work in states in terms of policy to really implement clean energy and climate goals at the state level. And a lot of my work is focused on the Midwest region specifically. So I'm working in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota on these advocacy efforts.
Well, Michigan and Wisconsin are a couple of those swing states where Donald Trump won the presidential election, but there were also key races like the U.S. Senate race here where the Democratic candidate Tammy Baldwin won. So we know how closely divided all of these states are. So I wanted to ask, looking back to November, the varying results out there, what was the takeaway from Evergreen Action? I mean, I'm sure it wasn't the outcome you expected for the race for the White House or control of Congress. But when you look at all these results on a state by state and a national basis, what's your frame of mind coming into 2025?
Yeah, that's a great observation. I think in these swing states that we saw, I don't think that the elections were really a testament to kind of things, voters being anti-climate, anti-clean energy from our perspective. We learned very quickly that voters were very concerned about things like immediate household costs. And what's really interesting is that a lot of the work that we're doing is focused on lowering energy costs through clean energy investments. And we saw support shift in states, of course, right? But at the end of the day, we saw a lot of local leaders who are really supportive of climate action, have implemented climate laws, get their seats back and continued support for the efforts they're doing on that front.
That's really great. So to know that, you know, despite not, you know, seeing what we wanted to see in a lot of those, the top of the ticket in some of those federal races, but to know that we had some climate champions at the state level, you know, able to hold on there. So one of the things we wanted to talk about with you, though, is we know that Evergreen wanted to really understand voters' view on climate change policies at the federal level and a little bit more about their experience with some of these climate-related weather events, and put a survey out in the field recently. Can you tell us a little bit about what you learned there?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, we commissioned a national survey working with YouGov, a national polling firm, to basically understand where voters sat on climate and clean energy issues post-election. Our perception was that these things were largely supported when they were passed, and we don't think that voters have backslided to the degree of the rhetoric we're hearing at the federal level from the Trump administration. So this survey talked to over 1,000 voters and asked them a bunch of questions basically about climate and clean energy investments that have happened and action that's being taken in support for those things. I think the massive takeaway we found from these surveys was that there is broad, bipartisan, and very strong support for climate and clean energy measures. So what we looked at was several measures as a part of the clean energy plan that the Biden administration carried out. And there was 61% support for the tax credits specifically that they implemented, which were focused on expanding renewable energy, lowering household energy costs by allowing people to invest in efficiency measures, tax credits for things like electric vehicles, which we know are more cost effective for drivers. And we saw 61% of people say that they don't want those things repealed despite Trump winning the election. Only 18% of voters supported repeal of that, which shows that obviously more than half of, or more than 18% of this country is Republican. There is bipartisan support within those things. And even more, I would just say that when we looked at specific measures within the Inflation Reduction Act, so when you pull out each tax credit specifically, voters even more strongly supported those things when they heard more specifically what they were. So things like home efficiency rebates, allowing people to invest in home solar, allowing clean energy companies to invest in more solar and wind expansion. We saw support in the 70s, low to high 70s on each one of those measures, which just shows how strong people want to move towards clean energy in a way that I think the national election results really didn't reflect.
No, I mean, again, you've got President Trump trying to repeal all manner of things from the Biden administration. And I certainly don't think that there was a lot of voters for Trump for repealing things. There was a lot of frustration about inflation, things like that. But a lot of what you just outlined would actually help people save money in the long run. So a lot of what you just said, a lot of the data is forward looking. But let me look back for just a moment, because your survey shows that, you know, voters don't think there's a single main culprit when it comes to how we got into this mess with our climate, but they do have a pretty good idea of who they hold most responsible for the situation we're in today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So to your point, they couldn't single out a single source of this is where the problem's coming from. I think more of this was an answer to where is like a lack of action being taken and where what is contributing to the problem specifically. So what we found was people very much identified oil and gas companies as one of the main sources behind that, tech companies and national politicians, which really speaks to us of people want these industries to be regulated to move towards clean energy, lower pollution, lower costs for consumers. And they really do want national politicians to take action. The fact that we saw, you know, them voters really contribute some of the blame towards national politicians just signals that they are in support of more action even happening at the federal level, which is really the opposite of what's going on federally right now. And I think really a signal that, you know, the Trump administration is really, really approaching this the wrong way. And Republicans in Congress who are really fighting the fight for the Trump administration to try to repeal some of these popular things that pass under Biden are not doing right by voters who support them.
I guess it leads to this rhetorical question, which is unfair to you and Melissa, but I'm going to ask you both anyway. So how much longer can Republican elected officials go on in many ways ignoring what their own voters are telling them in terms of their support for clean energy and for these tax credits that would make their lives more affordable, make their homes more efficient? Melissa, you're our political wonk. I'm going to start with you. It's a rhetorical question, I grant you. But mm-hmm. I mean, I always get the sense when we're talking that you can feel that pendulum swinging. But obviously, the proof would be in more Republicans taking the lead on some of these measures.
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, the easy answer is we're going to find out in 2026 how much they have misjudged the mandate they think they have from the voters. You know, I believe they have really misjudged what, you know, was an anti-incumbent sentiment, not just in the U.S., but globally, and interpreted that as, you know, permission to do all the crazy things they want to do. And really, people are just frustrated about rising costs and feeling like things weren't going how they should be going, and, you know, fatigue coming out of the pandemic. And they didn't necessarily want to see all of the crazy stuff that we're seeing. So I think that the, you know, the easy answer is we're going to know in 2026 in the midterm election. But I think that we're already starting to see it, though, because we are seeing quite a bit of backlash from folks around the country to some of the things that have already happened. We saw the, you know, planned massive cuts to programs like Medicaid and to the clean energy programs and SNAP and so many programs that Trump, when he put out his funding freeze memo, that he's rescinded the memo, but now we're still going to be cutting things. So people were correctly outraged to learn that these really critical, important programs were going to be slashed. And that caused them to rescind the memo. It doesn't mean that they're going to not cut the programs necessarily. But, you know, I think that they're going to really find out.
Let me ask it in a more positive way for Courtney here, because, again, we know about the bipartisan support. We've talked about it here for some time here. So let me put it this way. In the session ahead, Congress, legislature, or both, your choice, what do you consider to be the low-hanging fruit in terms of, you know, where you might see some bipartisan progress? Is everything on defense right now, just preventing cuts to the Inflation Reduction Act and things like that? Or are you looking at potential policies in Madison or Washington where the Democrats and Republicans alike would go to the voters in 2026 and say, see, we're listening to you, we're making some progress?
Yeah, so I think in the moment we're in, to the point Melissa was just making, we really are in a defensive stance in terms of advocacy right now. We know that Republicans are pretty outright set on repealing all of the credits within the Inflation Reduction Act. I think just to reiterate, the fact that only 18% of voters in the survey supported that repeal is really going to come up throughout this fight. If they move to repeal those things, I do think we're going to see that backlash in particular. We know voters are concerned about costs. And when we message tested on a bunch of reasons voters could support climate action, the number one thing they said was because it would lower costs at the household level. So that really sticks out as those things being directly in conflict with each other. The repeal of these tax credits, while you ran on lowering costs for consumers, it doesn't add up. We also, as part of this, we're kind of looking into research around what repealing these tax credits would do. And several reports, including one from Aurora Energy Research, show that repealing of these tax credits would result in 10% higher energy bills on average for consumers. So I think we're really going to see that backlash. And I think a lot of people will be engaged in the budget process at the federal level, people at the local level really chiming in with their representatives about how beneficial these tax credits have been for them. And I think, you know, it comes down to things as simple as, are you going to take the side of the oil and gas companies who voters are blame for this conflict in part, and the Trump administration, who's very misaligned with voters, or are you going to take the side of the people who elected you? I think that's really what it comes down to here.
If folks want to learn more about Evergreen Action, how can they do that?
Visit our website, evergreenaction.com. You'll see a lot about our work happening at the federal and state level.
Melissa, again, I know it's something that we've talked about before, but it's nice to see the reinforcement here that there is public support for these things, and they're worth telling your legislator or your congressperson about.
Absolutely.
Melissa, thank you so much. Courtney Brady, Midwest Director for Evergreen Action. Great to talk to you. Appreciate the visit. Have a great day.
Thanks so much.
We'll be back with more after this. You're up, Tony.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is the late Corey Wells singing lead for Three Dog Night on Mama Told Me Not to Come. Part of today's history lesson on this Wednesday morning. Mama Told Me Not to Come, by the way, Three Dog Night song written by Randy Newman. One of his first impressions of the L.A. party scene when he moved there in the late 1960s. You don't see a party scene like that anymore, at least not in L.A. You got to go to Wisconsin Rapids to get that, which is where we find Melissa Kay. From WFHR.
I just imagine Randy Newman. Mama told me not to come. You've got a friend in me.
You know, hi, Melissa. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. You know, hey, we just were talking at the legislative committee meeting last night about having ordinances to allow block parties. So maybe this is the place to come, guys.
Maybe it is. Those block parties could be it. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, though, the Randy Newman on the Grammys. The other night, it was all about L.A. and the fires and the recovery. And so the first song they sing is I Love L.A. Randy Newman, not even a mention. So
they didn't mention his name at all?
Nothing. Aww. I know.
Do you know what he was doing when that whole thing happened? He was just sitting on a pile of money, not caring.
That could be it. How are things in Wisconsin Rapids? What y'all doing?
You know, we're discussing block parties. We're discussing banning fluoride in the water.
Oh, come on. No.
That's what's happening.
This is our world. Okay.
World.
Yeah. All right. Well, Melissa will continue to follow that on 97.5 WFHR, 105.5 WIRI. Let's get back to the history lesson. The number one song this day in 1966 was by Petula Clark. Who didn't love Pat Clark? Didn't we just play Downtown from her last week? We were talking about downtowns and how wonderful they are, or used to be, whatever.
They're not as wonderful as Greg's dancing, though.
No,
if you're
no.
Not watching in the live stream, you're really missing out.
You're missing the shoulder shimmy. Yep. On this day in 1958, a hydrogen bomb was lost by the U.S. Air Force off the coast of Savannah, Georgia. It has never been recovered.
Lost.
There's an H-bomb in the ocean.
It bought property on the coast. It's been, you know, up in a surf
shop.
Working
on its beach pod.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go from the peppy bubblegum rock of the 1960s to the soft rock of the mid-70s. Mary McGregor had the number one song this day in 1977.
Oh, what a problem to have.
This is the before. The after is when she's on Jerry Springer with the two guys, and there's bouncers fighting them and everything else.
It's my baby. No, it's my baby.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Maury Povich is there.
Stop calling me your lover. It's weird.
I know. Mary McGregor with First World Problems this day in 1977. This is the anniversary of the birth of the legend Hank Aaron, born this day in 1934. Chris Barron of the Spin Doctors is 57 years old today. I think we've got another Spin Doctors tune coming up before the day is out here. Happy birthday to country singer Sarah Evans. She's 54 today.
That didn't work the way I wanted to, but there she is, Sarah Evans. I love Sarah Evans. Such a good concert.
I do too. This song was coming up, and she was coming up about the same time as Faith Hill.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you see two people, and it's like one of them gets a little bit more famous than the other. Yep. Not that Sarah Evans isn't famous, don't get me wrong. But it was like you're watching these both these newcomers, and like one just goes, whoosh, really takes off. But they're both very
well. I think it's because Sarah Evans always stuck to more of a country sound.
Yeah. Didn't try to cross over on the pop charts.
Not really.
Right. Let's see. The new number one song this week in 1983 was by Toto.
Ooh, Toto is a band.
Toto too.
Hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you.
Now, is this Toto or is this the other band, that Weezer?
This is Toto. This is Toto.
I'm joking, but Weezer's version is not that different at all.
I've never listened to that version because I don't care. This version better.
You've missed nothing. I'm going to get to Beyonce in just a moment here, but let me tell you that it's Chocolate Fondue Day.
Oh.
Also, Nutella Day. Can you have Nutella Day and Chocolate Fondue Day? Seems
only if you eat them simultaneously.
Doctors don't recommend it.
And what do you dip in that fondue?
It's whatever
National
you want.
Pork Rind Day. Oh. National Pork Rind Day.
I mean,
it's International School Play Day. Go outside and play at school. Girls and Women in Sports Day. We've been talking about that the past couple of days. And it's National Weather Person Day.
Woohoo! Yay, Brittany!
Yay, Brittany! Which I hope she still comes into work today. Anyway. And finally, on this day 2 years ago, Beyonce won 4 Grammys, breaking the record for the most all-time Grammy wins ever.
I think she has 99 nominations.
99 nominations. 2 years ago, she broke the record with 32. She's now up to 35 Grammys. So by comparison, you guys, Quincy Jones has 28.
Yeah.
Alison Krauss, 27. John Williams, 26. Stevie Wonder, 25. How many do the Beach Boys have?
Zero.
Quiz.
Zero.
You're looking at the notes.
Oh, I wasn't looking.
No, I actually heard that yesterday. So.
Okay.
Oh, Diana Ross? I didn't look. I just guessed.
Okay. All right. I believe you. Diana Ross? Zero. Queen?
Didn't want to see that. Zero.
Zero. Yeah. ABBA, have you figured out the trend by now?
Zero.
ABBA, zero Grammys. Exactly. But, you know, others, they're rolling in the Grammys here. And Beyonce is now your...
That was Adele. Does she have any Grammys yet?
Yes, she does.
Adele does.
Somewhere in the teens. I don't have the full chart in front of me here. But Melissa Kay, thank you so much for playing along as always.
Absolutely.
16.
Thank you. I knew it was out there someplace.
On the facts, Greg.
Candidate Jeff Wright for state superintendent and Congressman Mark Pocan in the second hour of Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.